So you're listening to NIM FM 102.3, and that was Lisa Yates with a live recording of Trouble, very appropriate track. And we're here with Dr. Zolde Ishtar, and she is an expert on militarization in the Oceania region, and she's from the Australian Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies. Hello, Zol.
Hello.
And would you like to continue on filling us in about the implications of Talisman Sabre for Australia and the rest of the world?
I just want to come back to the agreement you mentioned earlier, which was signed in 2004, a 25-year agreement by a body called AUSMIN, Australia United States Ministerial Consultation. And what that's done is, well, there's a lot of news on at the moment about ballistic missile defense systems the United States wants to establish in Europe, and that Russia is very concerned about that, and I think rightly so. But that's creating a smokescreen for what's actually going on with ballistic missile defense systems in the Pacific, in the Northwest Pacific. The AUSMIN agreement is tied to another agreement, a trilateral agreement between Japan, the United States, and Australia. Australia is part of the development of a ballistic missile defense system with the United States and Japan, which will be based in Japan. So I want people to be aware of that. This all feeds back into Talisman Sabre.
Yep.
Because Talisman Sabre, as I was explaining before, is a training ground for the military. It's the most important training ground in the whole Northwest Pacific. The United States is shifting its attention away from the... not completely away from the Atlantic, but specifically into the Pacific. It's basing its forces on its what it claims to be its own territory. Guam, and by the way, we have somebody from Guam coming to the Talisman Sabre protest.
Great.
Hawaii, and we have two women from Hawaii coming. And Alaska. These are being built up, facing huge military expansion at the moment. but one of the places I want to talk about, which people don't know about really, is the Marshall Islands. People will remember that the Marshall Islands was where the United States detonated 67 nuclear bombs.
That's right.
Directly after Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yep.
The United Nations allowed this to happen. Okay, so as a result, we have a situation where we have a major health crisis in the Marshall Islands. It's the highest cancer rate in the whole Pacific region. Women are afraid to give birth because they're giving birth to babies who have no shape, babies who are deformed, babies who look like jellyfish. They have no head, they have no arms, they have no legs. They do not look like human beings at all. They breathe on the labor table and then they die. This is a concern about the militarization in the Pacific. The Marshallese can tell us what a nuclear war looks like and what it feels like. But the thing is that in the middle of the Marshall Islands is an atoll called Kwajalein. Kwajalein is an atoll of 43 islands. One of those islands is called Ebi. Ebi is only 66 acres. That's really small. There is currently 16,000 people living on Ebi.
Wow.
In incredible slum conditions, the worst slum conditions in the Pacific.
Does the American government take any responsibility or has acknowledged this, especially the cancer and the children?
Well, they have done a limited... it took 30 years before they started to take some responsibility, but it was only limited, and it's run out of funds.
So these people, as you said, are living in poverty on this island without any assistance, what, from the government that's bombing or using their island?
Well, what's actually happening in Kwajalein is that that's the most important base for Star Wars, for space warfare technology in the entire world. It's in Kwajalein, where the United States is developing a space warfare technology. Next door is the people of Ebi. On Thursday, I'm jumping before myself here. The United States has created a false economy in the Marshall Islands to make the Marshall Islands government, which became independent in 1986, kowtow to its military ambition.
And how's the American government doing that? By financing?
Well, no, by actually flooding the place with goods and services, not so much services, but goods, grants, there's a whole way that you create loyalty and create economic dependency at the same time. But the point about Kwajalein is that being a huge military base in the middle of the Pacific that nobody knows about, is that the Marshall Islands government has signed an agreement with the United States to extend the lease, which currently ends in 2016, to the year 2086. Oh. Now, I can't even imagine 2086, but the Kwajalein landowners, the traditional owners of Kwajalein, have said, no way. We want this lease to end in 2016. You've never taken care of us. We are, you know, we have no room. What are the young population going to do when they grow up? There's no room to live here. What's actually just happened last Thursday is that the Marshall Islands government, which consists of all of the island groups in the Marshall Islands, has turned around to the Kwajalein landowners and said, you have to take this fuel to fuel your power plant. If you don't take this particular fuel, it's the last fuel we've got, you're going to be without electricity. Kwajalein landowners said, no, that fuel is connected to that lease. If we take that fuel, we sign that lease. We agree to that lease and we don't agree to that lease. So the electricity was turned off on eBay, the Pacific's biggest slum, on Thursday.
Because they wouldn't agree to sign.
They wouldn't agree to the agreement between the Marshall Islands and the government.
Do you think these people have much hope of being able to withstand that power?
Well, part of the thing is that I think that the best that they can do is to try to get a better agreement for their people.
Exactly.
But only because the world doesn't even know that Kwajalein exists or that eBay exists.
And
doesn't know about this, and the traditional leaders in Marshalls, I was there last year, in eBay, I was there last year, have specifically asked me to help let the world know about what's going on there, because to answer your question, will they have the ability to stand against the United States? Not unless the world gets behind them. And the situation is the world doesn't even know they exist.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things I'm sure that you'll be letting the rest of us know is about that when we're in Shoalwater Bay.
Yeah, that's what one of the projects that I'm doing with the Talisman Sabre is really trying to put it into the global perspective for all of us so that we know this isn't just about one exercise.
And these sort of people saying that the mainstream media isn't reporting these type of things, and indeed not even much about Talisman Sabre. What do you think is the cause of this? Is there some sort of pressure from the military on the government, which is silencing the media?
Oh, I can't comment on that. I'm sorry, I have no comment to make on that whatsoever.
Okay.
I haven't been studying the media relationships, and therefore I'm not qualified to speak about that.
Okay.
I of course have my own opinions.
Yes. Yes, because a lot of people are saying, well, why don't people know about this? And I guess get it out there.
Yes, I think it's more than about the media. It's about what people of conscience do,
yeah.
You know, and we silence ourselves because we feel that we haven't got a right to speak about these things.
Yeah.
But Australia is a member of the United Nations. We have an obligation to take care of people around the planet who are
yeah.
who are with the United Nations. Well, it's the United Nations which gave the Marshall Islands to the United States to do their nuclear testing back in 1946.
Right.
Australia was a member in those days.
So it's quite a long history of that happening.
It's Australia's responsibility. There's a very long history to it. People can educate themselves, so all the information is on the internet, and it's radio stations such as your own which really make this can get this information out, and I thank you today for listening.
Yes, thank you very much. And we'll play a track now, and this is from an Indigenous woman. This is My Island Home, and then are you able to stay with us a bit longer, Zol?
Sure.
Great.
Thank you.
Most of you do know I am Janita Kai, the one and only. I'm going to sing to you a song, My Island Home. I sang it for Harmony Day, and also Veronica did, but she won't come up because she hasn't got scars. So I'm just going to go ahead. Six years I've been in the city, and every night I dreamt of the sea. They say home is where you find it. Will this place and satisfy me? For I come from the soul towards the people. We always live by the sea. Now I'm down here living in the city with my men and family.
Here, Gail and I on NIM FM 102.3 with Dr. Zolda Ishtar, and we've been talking about the implications of the increased militarization, which Australia is complicit in with and heavily involved in with the US government. So welcome back, Zol.
Thank you.
And that track we just played was My Island Home, which is Indigenous woman Juanita was performing. Very appropriate track.
I'll just pick up from there if you don't mind. I mean, considering it was my island home, I think I should spend some time talking about the Chamorro and Guam.
Definitely. Thank
They're
you.
The Indigenous people of Guam, First Nation in the entire Pacific region colonized by European power in 1668 by the Spanish. They resisted the Spanish. There was a lot of there was a war of extermination of the Chamorro peoples. And from there, the United States, after the Spanish-American War, took Guam from the Spanish. So since then, apart from a small interlude during the last war, when Japan had it for 3 years, it's been an American base. I was going to say an American territory, but it is actually an American base. One third of the island is controlled by the military. It's one of the Pacific's largest airfields is there, and it's an Air Force base. They've got B-52s, stealth bombers, fighter planes. There's a huge harbor there, Apra Harbor, which is where they bring in nuclear-powered and nuclear-capable, therefore possibly nuclear-carrying aircraft carriers. They're going to put the ballistic missile defense there. It's huge. And, of course, this is impacting on the Chamorro people. In 1946, the United States, for some strange unknown reason, unilaterally put the Guam onto the list of non-self-governing territories before the United Nations, which had to be decolonized. Guam still hasn't been decolonized. In 1946, the United States promised that they would leave. That was a step towards decolonization. In 1950, they signed the Organic Act, which recognized all the residents on Guam at that time as being Chamorro, and that they would promise them an act of self-determination. They still haven't got it. And as I was saying before, the military build-up, which is currently taking place on Guam, starting next year and finishing in 2014, we'll see a massive build-up of increase in the population of Guam, which will make the Chamorro people even a a greater minority. They're currently 42% of the population.
Wow. And so we are going to the increased military presence is for a shorter period in Australia, but they go back to Guam, do they? Some of the
They just use Shellwater Bay, Delamere and Bradshaw in Northern Territory, Lancelin in Western Australia. They use them as training grounds because Australia is the only place in the entire Northwest Pacific where this incredible military build-up is happening for training. And, of course, if you've got troops and you've got weapon systems, you have to train them. We have to keep in mind here that Australia, by doing this, Australia is supporting the world's foremost nuclear power. We currently have 27,215 nuclear warheads on this planet at the moment. The United States has 10,000 of them. 2,000 of them are 2,000 of the world's global nuclear arsenal is currently on alert. We have 2,000 nuclear weapons right now pointed at people ready to go off.
Yeah.
Okay, the United States has got 10,000 of the nuclear weapon, global nuclear arsenal, and two-thirds of that is on submarines, and the United States is moving its submarine, its naval force, 60% of its naval force into the Pacific. This is really what the Talisman Sabre is about. So by providing a terrain in which the United States can train their soldiers, they won't be using nuclear weapons here. They won't be detonating nuclear weapons, but they are forces which are trained to use nuclear weapons. And by having Talisman Sabre, Delamere, Bradshaw, etc., we actually participate in training their forces. So Australians have to figure out whether we want to support the world's foremost nuclear power.
That's right. And I guess, too, there will be a lot of toxic effects for the environment from the weapons they are testing.
Well, we've seen the use of bombing targets in Vieques, in Hawaii at Koholawe Island of Koholawe, and also on Makua Valley in Hawaii. They do urban training in the middle of Guam, with a huge population on that island. I was there just last year, and they were bombing outside the door of the person whose house I was staying in. They do bombing targets practice up the northern different islands on the Northern Marianas chain. They are doing practices in Okinawa, which is part of Japan. And all these weapons do carry with them risks. The thing about, I want to bring in Hawaii here, because we actually have two women coming to Talisman Sabre from Hawaii, Kere Kekulani, and I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the second woman, but they're going to come to Yapoon and participate in the Talisman Sabre, and they're going to tell us about Hawaii's role in this, because Hawaii is the headquarters for PACOM, Pacific Command, and Pacific Command Hawaii controls the Talisman Sabre exercise, although it actually is logistically controlled from Williamstown near Newcastle, where they just had that giant storm.
Yeah.
Williamstown is the command center for the exercise. So, I mean, they're going to be using a lot more than just Shellwater Bay for this. But going back to Hawaii is 40%. 40% of Hawaii is military.
Wow, that's a massive amount.
And the island of Oahu, which is where Honolulu is, has got 110 U.S. facilities on it, U.S. military facilities on it.
And that must impact quite a lot on the local residents.
Well, then you come back to the issue of the indigenous, the Kanaka Maoli, and the whole colonization of Hawaii. I mean, Hawaii was stolen in 1898 by a bunch of sugar merchants who didn't want to pay taxes, backed up by warships who wanted Hawaii as a forward base.
The big bullies.
You know, so it's all tied into colonization, of course.
Yeah.
It's not surprising. One has to mention here that Shellwater Bay is the land of the Dharambal people.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, Zol, because we're here in Bundjalung country, and we were wanting to find out more about the indigenous native, the landowners there.
Well, I cannot speak on behalf of the landowners there, obviously. We're going onto their country with respect.
Yes.
To support their the indigenous position there, what we understand, whatever position they need to take in the context of the situation and the politics in which they find themselves, we honour and respect totally. And we will be treading carefully on Indigenous land.
Yeah, that's great to know. Could you just say again for our listeners the name of the Indigenous tribe there?
The Darumbal.
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 But I want to talk to you about the Women's Forum.
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah, that's taking place in Rockhampton on Thursday the 21st of June. Women's Forum, War and War Games, Their Impact on Women. It's at 2 o'clock. It's going to be at the Walter Reed Centre in Rockhampton. It's going to be Dr. Rachel Darkin from Medical Association Prevention of War.
Yes.
Myself and Fanai Castro, who's the Chamorro woman who's coming from Guam. And what we're going to be talking about is the militarization impact on women. And this is one of the concerns that the Chamorro women have. In fact, people on Guam, residents on Guam, right across the board, even if they're not Chamorro, have this concern that increasing militarization will increase the risk of women, both from the military directly. We have experiences of that in Okinawa, which is one of the reasons why the United States has to leave there, because the Okinawan people stood up and said, "We have enough. You've just raped a 12-year-old girl. You've just raped a 67-year-old woman. We don't want this sort of behavior in our country." In South Korea, same problem. So there's a concern about by the people in Guam, particularly the women in Guam, that this transporting of, when I talk about the military build-up in Guam, the troops are going to be coming from, 9,000 of those increasing troops will come from Okinawa. So they're shifting sideways into Guam. Okinawa's near Guam. And that's directly because as a result of the people's protest against the militarization and specifically its impact on violence against women. So there's a military connection with increasing violence against women, but there's also the domestic problems which rise up as a result of increased militarization of a region, which may result in violence against women as well within the families. Particularly with issues such as poverty, a crumbling infrastructure, damage to water supply. These are real problems. These are also concerns of the Guam people, the Chamorro people. And it's also a problem we're facing here in Australia. One of the reasons this forum is taking place in Rockhampton is there is concern within Rockhampton, as I understand it, that the increasing militarization may lead to violence against women and children in Rockhampton as in the form of increased prostitution and issues like that. So that's why we're holding the Women's Forum.
That's fantastic, and we'll definitely be there. And,
good one.
Hopefully we can record, if we have permission to record some of the speakers, we can make sure that our listeners and if we podcast, a wider audience can be filled in about that, because it's such an important issue that's very close to our hearts. And when you mentioned about the birth defects of in Guam,
birth defects in Marshall Islands.
In the Marshall Islands, sorry. Yeah, I actually, find that very disturbing, and it's really important that people know what's going on.
Well, if people want to know more, I have two books. One's Daughters of the Pacific.
Yeah.
Daughters of the Pacific, that's a 1994 book, which I just went back to Micronesia last year to upgrade, and I'm in the process of doing Daughters of the Pacific.
Right.
No, that's not going to be the new title, but anyway. And the other book is Pacific Women Speak Out for Independence and Denuclearization. Now, those two books can be got from a local library.
Okay, so the second one, Women Speak Out for...
Pacific Women Speak Out for Independence and Denuclearization.
I'm just writing
that
these down.
That book's not on the market,
yep.
But people can access, can order and purchase Daughters of the Pacific through the Spinifex Press website.
Right. Spinifex Press website.
Yeah, just remember the sharp grass out in the desert.
Yes.
And that brings me to my third book, which is Holding Yawulyu, White Culture and Black Women's Law, and it's about the work that I do out in the Western Australian desert with the women elders to take care of law and take care of culture.
And will it be possible to get any of those books?
Will you have any of
them in when you're up in Shoalwater Bay? And will we be able to get copies of those? Are they available up there?
Yes, the bookshop is going to be putting on a stall in which they'll be selling Helen Caldicott and my books.
Oh, fantastic.
And probably a few other books, I hope. So there'll be that. So Holding Yawulyu, White Culture and Black Women's Law is also available on the Spinifex website.
Fantastic.
Zola, have you heard...
I want to thank you very much. I think the contribution you are making to Talisman Sabre and to all of the issues that are associated with Talisman Sabre is invaluable, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, great. Yes, no, we are very committed to supporting all the efforts that you're doing and...
Disseminating the information, like
yes.
You've told us a lot this morning that neither of us were aware of, and we're thankful for that because ignorance, as they say, can be bliss, but I don't think so. I'd like to have as much information as possible, and it's people like you that have been travelling for so long and have been just trying to get this information out that really inspire us and our radio station to keep on podcasting and getting information out as far and wide as we can.
Well, while we're passing gratitude for inspiration around, I have to pass my gratitude onto the Indigenous women, both here in Australia and across the Pacific, who have inspired me and who have grown me up.
Exactly the film we were watching the other night, the women, the strong, powerful women in there that just maintained their stance, and eventually the Americans did leave. But they've left a great big mess behind them. But, hey...
Yeah. It's women. Women have got the strength, and our men folk, we live with them, we love them. You know, they're there, and they're part of the struggle too. So, you
strengthen your women, and you strengthen your whole community.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And we did have some Native American elders came to Nimbin about a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And the women, Wanda Ghost Calf Woman and Rochelle, both said quite a bit about it's the time for the women, and so did William White Eagle, the elder man that was there.
Yeah.
It's time for the women to come forward. This is women are the centre of to do with standing up for what's happening with the planet and with loss of civil liberties, and yeah, they were very encouraging to us, and
yeah.
That was great that we had them come and visit.
Well, the women I work with out in the Western Australian Great Sandy Desert, we're hearing a lot about Indigenous health issues being in a terrible crisis, and indeed they are. People talk about the need for more medical issues, more medical support services. Well, the women elders I work with are calling out to be heard as the women healers that they are, the Jarjara. Have a gift to offer to the world, and they should be national treasures, these women.
Exactly.
So I'd like to do an interview with you sometime on that too.
That'd be fabulous. Look, we're going to have lots of time, and as I say, we mightn't put it all out straight away, but it will get out and onto our podcasting, the interviews we do with you when we actually are sitting beside you.
And thank you very much.
Really looking forward to meeting you. We'll go over to a track which is from a local woman, Lisa Yates, who was involved with the Franklin River blockade and with lots of local amazing actions that have saved local forests. And she's a great musician and very supportive of us going up to the Peace Convergence. And we'll be back with you in a moment, Zoe.
There's no war
We're back on NIM FM 102.3. It's 11:36 a.m. And that was, of course, Lisa Yates with the track War. And
the war on.
We're here with, Dr. Zolder Ishtar, who is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee and an incredible wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Zol. And would you like to leave any... last information for our listeners about the convergence with events that are on.
One that can to come up. And if they can't come for whatever reason, that's fine. But to do what they can with where they are. And the thing is just to either have fun up there or have fun at home. But let's stop this war games.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Some of the events I really want to point out. I just talked about the Women's Forum on the Thursday, and there's a film night on that night, Study War No More, which I think is going to be great. That's also at the Walter Reed Centre, so same as the Women's Forum in Rockhampton. Now, there's a huge welcome forum on Friday, June the 22nd, starting at 7 o'clock at the Yeppoon Town Hall, which is going to include our Guam and Hawaiian guests, Helen Caldicott, myself, Hannah Middleton from Anti-Basis, Kim Stewart from Friends of the Earth, and be chaired by Kevin Clements, Professor Kevin Clements from the Australian Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies. And, of course, the wonderful Steve Bisharik, who's been on your program this morning.
And we also, we're hoping to record that and put it out to not only our listeners here on NIM FM, but to podcast that opening.
I hope you are going to record everything.
Yeah, we will as much as we can.
Yeah, we're bringing quite a few recording devices, and I've noticed that the Peace Convergence media team seems very well organised and has a lot of different equipment, so I'm sure that we're going to get some great recordings out there.
Well, we set up the media centre day before yesterday in Yeppoon, and we'll be running media conferences, and that will be our media centre. So yes, we're trying to get this out to the world. But just to finish with some of the events, there are different times scattered around for direct action.
Yep.
Non-violent direct action, and so people will come to them. I mean, different times, but there's also the concert on the beach on the Saturday afternoon, after following a morning full of doing creative, constructive, non-violent actions.
Yeah.
And at the same time as the concert, there's a speaker's soapbox. So we've got 5 hours of listening to speakers.
Oh, wow.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
We've got a huge peace breakfast going on at Byfield, which is where the right up as close as you can get to Shoalwater Water Bay training area. There's a huge rally, a peace rally, on Sunday the 24th at 11 o'clock. It's taking place in Yeppoon. And then we finish on 5 o'clock that evening, Sunday evening, the last day, with a closing ceremony and candlelight vigil. It's going to be fun again.
We've asked all our locals here to be with us and light candles for that whole weekend.
Oh, yeah. So, and then we finish with a cycle against the nuclear cycle launch on the Monday.
Yes.
So the whole thing is going to be fantastic.
We are so looking forward to getting up there and being a part of it. And as I said, getting as much information out as we possibly can, because that's the only way we can change anyone's mind, isn't it?
As long as we keep on having fun.
Yes.
We will.
So much looking forward to seeing it.
The thing is to change the world is the way we do it is as important as our goal.
I think so.
We've just got to keep on taking care of each other, having fun, and talking story to each other so we all know what is the information we're all carrying.
Thank you
for having this opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Yes, it's great to introduce you to our listeners, because I'm sure they'll be hearing a lot more from you. So we'll leave with a track from a album of Greetings from Shoalwater Bay. And this is also local music. And thank you so much, Zol.
And we know how busy you are, but keep laughing, keep smiling. And as I say, look forward to meeting you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Who gets to play in pristine Shoalwater Bay? You or me or the kids, not even speculators with the highest bid, not fishermen or bushwalkers, naturalists or bird stalkers, not Sam Nature Love. No, it's the Defense Department of the USA. What they gonna play? Shoalwater Bay, the biggest ever war games. Yeehaw! Can you call war a game?
It's not a base, it's only a facility. It's real kind of your government to invite us. Scrap the environmental impact statement before and after the war games. That's something we learned back in the Philippines. Before they kicked us out, we can't test these bunker bombs back home. Suckers go off.
Walla. It goes to Goanna. Fry frog. Roast that rainforest.
Who's gonna play?
Lost the bird light. Hit paste those pelicans. Tortured turtle.